and welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name, you know it by now, it's Adam Cook. And listen, I don't need that chump Adam Carroll or that guy who thinks he's hard, Chris White. Don't need him. What, gaming marathon, thinks he's tough all of a sudden. At least that's what Gary Bailey is saying, isn't it, Gaz? How are you?
Damn right, I'm saying that.
Laying down those slurs before we started recording.
Yeah, but get all the... get all those slurs out the way first and start.
I mean, of course, I massively respect Chris for what he's done, and Adam, of course, sharing the same name. I mean, I was just quoting you, so, you know, it's just one of those things, you know. I know that you'll stand by your convictions, Gaz, in a week where it is just the two of us, mate. The first time we've just done a podcast just as a duo, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. We've only ever done just chats, video chats before now.
We've only ever had normal interactions before now. It's actually quite a strange week because I can talk about no games that I am playing currently, so you can probably guess what they are. I can say, I think, that I finished Guacamelee 2 about a week ago at the time you're hearing this, even if you're a Patreon, because Patreons get it a couple of days early. You know, it's a longer version. You know by now. You've heard the adverts all the time. But yeah, I finished that about a week ago, and I'll talk about that next week. It's just sometimes embargoes fall kindly that you can chat about them when you're recording a podcast, and sometimes they don't fall so kindly. So regular listeners will be actually thinking, hang on, the embargo for that game went up yesterday, and the review's up, and blah, blah, blah. And that's all true, but at the time we're recording it, Patreon people get it early, can't break embargo for nobody. But, Gary, speaking of embargoes, we had a review of a game that, you know, was embargoed and is no longer embargoed. It's a racing game, Gary. It's released every year. It's not Forza. It's Formula One 2018, or more commonly known as F1 2018. Now, always confusing, because I think they're the only game that doesn't do the thing of giving it next year's...
Yeah.
Title, like, you know, FIFA 19 is this year, PES 2019, Madden, NBA, but F1, no, it's this year, yeah. Which is probably correct when you think about it.
Yeah, because it always, like, because of the way Formula One always moves forward with, like, the technology and stuff like that, the only way you could reasonably do it is doing it this way, basically keeping it sort of this season rather than next season.
I mean, I'm always fascinated by the F1 games because, like, it's mid-season, right? It's kind of the halfway point of the season for, and that seems like whereas FIFA and that and PES get out right near the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I think it's kind of because the way F1 works is they're constantly developing, like, the cars, so by the end of the season, things are very, very differently to when they started. Whereas, like, football, although things do change, the main teams kind of stay the same. And, you know, the way results pan out, they're usually a certain way. Well, sort of, you know, you do get some upsets. But I think, with F1, it's to make sure that when you're playing that season's game, it's the most realistic it can be. Like the most authentic,
right?
And it does work because it is about as authentic as you can get, really.
But does the game work? Is the game any good this year?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Okay,
I mean it's kind of more of an evolution of last year's game, which I was particularly harsh on last year's game. I think I gave it a 7.
Okay, that's not that harsh.
No, but. Yeah, in this year's game, and they've tightened up the handling ever so much, and it's just, I don't know, it just feels easy to play, but also realistic at the same time. So,
okay,
you know, you're still having to brake for corners and stuff like that, all the usual stuff, but it just feels a little more, or you feel a little more in control. So, I suppose it's giving you more of a feeling of being an F1 driver rather than just random dude playing an F1 game. You know what I mean? It's like the way FIFA and PES make you feel like you're, you know, playing a game of football.
Yeah.
Well, technically not, because obviously you're controlling an entire team rather than just one person. Well, unless you play like the pro mode, be a pro, whatever. Is that still a thing?
Yeah, they've both got similar modes where you can just pick a player.
Yeah. I'm such an old man when it comes to like the football games because I have no idea.
That's fine.
But yeah, the F1 game, it just feels a lot more easy to control. Although when it rains, you do know it. It's so difficult when it rains. I think it might have been my first race. It came to, like, I did all the practice sessions, great. Then it came to qualifying and it started raining. And I just couldn't do it. I really struggled. I think
that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, because it makes it more realistic. Because no matter how good the drivers are in F1, you see them struggle in the wet. You know, especially if it's, you know, really heavy rain, because the cars aren't really made for that.
I always found F1 quite strange in the rain because it's just the speed is not there. I mean, it's still obviously quicker than you drive around anyway normally, but like it's such a strange sport. You know, and it does. You know, most sports are affected by the weather. Like football, you have to change the way you kick the ball, you know, because you know it's going to skid.
Yeah.
But F1, you're talking, I don't know, what's the difference in terms of, like, you know, 200 miles an hour? What do they knock it down to? You know, I'm
trying to remember how it normally goes. Sort of like qualifying laps tend to be, I'm sure it's usually 10, 15 seconds slower.
Everyone's just basically trying not to die, aren't they? That's what it comes down to. When it comes down to it, like, I guess that's, you know, an analogy for life, or an allegory for life, rather. You know, we're just all just trying not to die. And back to the game. I've played as much. Yeah, maybe a bit too deep. I've played obviously not as much as you, but I was, you know, when it comes to criticizing the game, you know, the thing about F1 for me, right? I can absolutely, it's a bit like, I'm trying to think of something similar, but there are certain games where even if you would not play them, you can certainly respect them.
Yeah.
Like, and F1 is one of those games where I certainly respect it and I can tell it's a very good one of those. But it's the same, I feel the same way about F1 2018 or F1 series as I do about the mainline Forza games.
Yeah.
I can absolutely appreciate them visually. I can respect the realism, but I don't find them fun. And not all games, because obviously you play a game like, you know, I remember ages ago, That Dragon Cancer or something. I'm not playing that for fun. I'm playing it for an experience. But it's, I guess when it comes down to it, that's an emotional experience, whereas F1 is more of a simulation.
Yeah.
But I can 100% appreciate it. Like, from a critical standpoint, the only thing I was left thinking is, and they're not the only one that does it, there's this weird grain effect that people are doing with their artwork.
Yeah, I've noticed that in a few games.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of another one that does it, but I think it's one I played today, and I can't think what it was. But F1, like, obviously on PlayStation, or on any of them now, like when you load it up, there's like a splash screen and it's like got the key art of the game. This then carries through to the actual main menu where there's like this weird grainy effect over the visuals, and it looks like... I don't really know what it looks like. It's almost like a photocopy, and I don't know what... It's not a criticism against Codemasters or F1, because, as I say, it seems to be something that's slowly becoming sort of the thing at the moment, and it needs to go away, because it... Like yourself, I'm in the 4K world, and I don't... It looks really, really weird, especially when the rest of the game... Like, when... I don't know when I put it up there with the Forzas, but... Maybe not quite, but when it rains, like you say in this, it's if you got the right camera angle, you know, the right view, wow, you feel it. I mean, okay, maybe not quite up there with it, because the Project Cars is very good at that as well, actually.
Yeah, I think...
Two.
Yeah, I think this and Project Cars 2 are the ones that are, I think, the most realistic in terms of how the game plays when you hit the... You know, like,
and coincidentally, for me, the two I find least fun.
Yeah.
I know people listening who love that kind of thing will be like, "Oh, shut up!" But like, I can't help it. I prefer
it's the same
on
as
Rush. I prefer
when it comes
Horizon.
To stuff like PES and FIFA. I'd have the same thing. I'm not like dead into football anymore. Not like I used to be when I was a kid. And it's just kind of. I played the last PES when it went on Game Pass recently. And I enjoyed it, but it's one of those things where, like, I know I wouldn't play it for any more than, like, a Game Pass month or whatever, you know, while I had it for free.
Yeah.
So I'd play it a bit, have a bit of fun, and that'd be it. I know I wouldn't get much out of it from there. But, again, like you're saying with this, you can kind of respect, you know, that it does things like, very, very well.
Even as someone who's dipped in and out of the F1 games, basically for work over the last sort of 5 or 6 years, I can tell this is the one of probably, if not the best one in years, at least one of the best.
Yeah.
You know, it plays... I mean, I remember thinking back to the old PlayStation 1 era of F1 games where if you touch the blade of grass, you're out, you span out. And this actually... But it feels like there's the tuning of this game is such that if you want to get... A bit like Project Cars 2, actually, again. Like, if you want to sit there for hours and end and tune that game to be as accurate or not, I suppose, as you want it to be, that's definitely there. Like, there's stuff in the menus for this that are just like, oh, wow, they really went in... they really went for it.
They've gone all out. I mean, it's... Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly realistic to the point of like, there were times when I was really glad of the rewind button, because it's like I'd be going into a corner, I'd just hit it at the ever so slightly wrong angle, and I'd like catch the inner curb,
gotcha.
And you spin out, gone, you know. And it's I really like that level of realism, but I also
we should do a poll on that. We should let's not talk about polls, Gary, especially Twitter polls, but we should put a Twitter poll out and find out if people think that the rewind button for racing games is the best thing or the worst thing ever, because I kind of don't like it, but I do use it.
I personally think it's like, on in a video game world, I suppose it is the best thing for the racing genre, because it helps you learn how to play. So, you know, if you mess something up, you're like, okay, let's try that again. I do miss it when I play stuff like Project Cars 2, because that doesn't have it, you know. And that's one of the games which would really benefit from it, because the handling on that game is so brutal. But yeah, I really enjoy it. The only thing I don't like about the F1 game, I put this in the review as well, was the media stuff. I get why they put it in. You know, they're doing the whole, this is part of F1. You know, you do the interviews and stuff like that at the end of races or at the end of qualifying sessions or whatever. But it's the way it's done that I think just doesn't quite fit. Because, I mean, you will have seen it, but you get the whole thing where you get like a little, it's almost like a radial menu, like Mass Effect, so that kind of thing. And it's like, here's X amount of answers, and you can choose one of them, and it'll, you know, you'll be responding to the question, but at the same time, different departments within the team will react differently to it.
But like, man, this is the big thing for sports games, you know, Madden, FIFA, they all do it now. It's story games, and it's something, and it, I think it, regardless of game, you know, in the sports genre, I think it's a Marmite thing. You either really, you kind of appreciate it and it's cheesy and it works, or you're just like, I don't want this. And I think at least with FIFA, you don't, it's a separate mode, you know?
Yeah, that's it. Because I mean, with F1, if you want to play the career mode, you've got to deal with it. You know, there's no...
Whereas FIFA, it's got the journey, that is that thing.
Yeah.
And FIFA has also still got career mode, you know, manager mode, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah. I mean, as for technically, I mean, in F1, you can create your own championship. So if you want, you miss out on all the resources and stuff, like, you know, the developing the car over the season, that kind of thing, and dealing with the stuff of, you know, oh, I'm going to switch teams mid-season because, you know, you're racing for Renault, but you want to race for Ferrari, you know, that kind of thing. But I mean, the options there, but yeah, it's just, I think my biggest issue with the media thing is just that it doesn't give you enough time to respond.
Oh, really?
Because I found it only gives you like about 10 seconds, and some of the answers are quite long. And I'm like, I've got to work out which answer I want to give, but I only have 10 seconds to, you know, find out the difference between all the answers. So there are, you know, if they maybe either take out the timer or lengthen it a little bit, I think it just helps, because, you know, if it's any, you know, there are people, I'm not the quickest reader in the world, but there's people slower than me at reading, so they're going to struggle as a result. It's a bit of a nothing complaint, but it's...
No, I know.
It's an issue, but it's not the sort of thing that'll break the game.
But you mentioned, like, 10 seconds to reply there. How about this, then? How about if I gave you... If I gave you 10 seconds to describe Death's Gambit to me, how would you do that?
Well, I think we...
Ready? Oh, go on. Hang on, I'm just letting the little timer roll round to a nice round figure. Ready? And go.
Right, it's Castlevania meets Dark Souls meets Dust and Elysian Tale.
That's so, 10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean...
So I was quietly interested in this because it's one of those that you feel like it's a small game, but it's kind of up my street.
Yeah.
And I watched, it's actually Giant Bomb's quick look of the game, and it's put me right off the game. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it and to see if you mentioned any of the things they did. But
okay.
So one of the things is that they mentioned, and I think, to be fair, they mentioned why this is, but like, so say a game like any of those style of games, you know, the responsive kind of 2D pixel art or retro aesthetic games, usually you can control with the D-pad or your sticks.
Yeah.
Now, I think if you're a certain age, you go for the D-pad because yes, it's the dead zones aren't there, essentially. This you can't do that with because obviously there's functionality on the D-pad. But yeah, in their video, they also had it that you have to press and hold like L1 to go down ladders rather than just up, you know, down and like,
yeah,
some of it just sent, it seems confusing.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's a small issue, I think, but
okay.
I mean, overall, I mean, the game's it's good. I mean, it kind of does things a little differently because it's essentially, I mean, the aesthetic you've probably seen yourself is very Souls, down to the menus and. Even when you do like the class selection at the beginning, you can't create a character, but you can choose the class.
Yeah, sure.
But it's all very similar classes to Dark Souls. Even going down to kind of the way they look as well.
Right.
But yeah, when you beat creatures, you get shards in this rather than souls. And they're used to level up, as you'd expect. You save at statues rather than like bonfires, that kind of thing. But when you die, you don't lose those, so you can still level up. But what it does instead is that you lose one of your healing feathers when you die. That is left where you die.
And they stay, don't they? It's not like if you die again, you lose them. It's like, no, you lose another one and you can get them back.
Yes.
I mean, to be honest with you, the thing I got from the look of it, looking at trailers and stuff, is that to me it looks like, and it doesn't look as good as, but it looks like it's rather than Dark Souls, and I appreciate the irony of this comparison, but it looks a bit more like Salt and Sanctuary.
Yes. Yeah.
But not nearly as, because the thing is, it's almost like, you know, 6 degrees of Dark Souls here or something. but like Salt and Sanctuary, to me, the thing that I love the most about Dead Cells is that has combat that feels like Salt and Sanctuary, but it removes the Dark Souls elements and it is just a kind of a run based game.
Yeah.
So if you took the persistence, I guess. Well, there is a persistence to Dead Cells, but not in the same way. If you took away the, you know, you die and you respawn here and blah, 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 and the leveling up stuff, that's Dead Cells. It's got that. In fact, the combat's better than Salt and Sanctuary, but it's that, you know, in Salt and Sanctuary, it's incredibly responsive and quick and it feels like an action game, yeah? I look at the trailers and stuff for Death's Gambit and I feel it looks more like, whereas Salt and Sanctuary took the Dark Souls thing, but made it in their style, in Scar Studios' style.
Yes, yeah.
I feel like what Death's Gambit looks like to me, and again, I haven't played it, this is just what I've seen of it, it looks like they took the Dark Souls, put it into 2D.
Yeah.
End. Like, obviously, it's not. Yeah. Obviously, it's their art style, and as you say, there's twists, but generally, and I think that I don't think I want to play that. I think I want to play the Salt and Sanctuary where they give you the speedy combat, like the not, you know, I don't think there's weapons in it, and it's the same with Dead Cells where you can get big heavy weapons, but there's also really quick stuff. And the thing is, in a game at Salt and Sanctuary, in a game at Dead Cells, like if someone shoots an arrow at you, you can just jump it.
Yeah,
like you can't do that in the 3D world. You know, like Dark Souls, Dark Souls. There's another game, Dark Souls. You and Bloodborne. You have to, you know, it's a 3D space.
Yeah, yeah. It's a dodging thing, and it's
yeah.
I think Death's Gambit is an odd one because I mean I'm approaching the end as I'm playing it. It's quite. It's not dead long. It's kind of
there's a lot of these games hitting, I feel like, at the moment. These kind of 2D action adventure retro looking but modern, you know, there seems to be a lot of it. Like Guacamelee 2 is another, it's a Metroidvania, you know. Again, next week we'll talk about that, but
yeah,
you know,
it's all sort of coming around again. It's almost like when you did get a few of those coming out a little after Dark Souls, you know, when that became big, you got the odd one coming out. But it seems to be coming round again, and there's a lot, especially 2D ones as well. And I mean, I'm happy about it because I love those
kind
of games.
It. Yeah, same.
But yeah,
I mean, hey, listen, Ori and the Blind Forest is next year. You know, I'm all for these kind of games.
Yeah, which I still need to
play
the first
Blind Forest.
Actually.
Oh, Gary, please play it.
I've got it, and I will play it eventually.
That sounds like an excuse to stream, just like. I'm streaming, so I'm going to play this game. Because that is such a good game.
It's a good idea. I think I did buy it with the intent of possibly streaming it anyway. So right. Yeah, it's not a bad shout. But yeah, this one is a little bit odd. I think it's just... I like... It's got more of a story than most of them. You know, there's stuff like Dark Souls, and I've not played Dead Cells yet, but the Salt and Sanctuary, it was quite... like subtle, you know, there was little bits here and there, and the rest you kind of filled in the blanks yourself. Whereas this one, there is more of an actual story to it.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of it, actually.
Yeah, and the problem is, it's a little bit odd. Like, it just feels like it just throws something at you out of left field all the time. Like, for example, at one point, I was just playing the game normally. I think I was at a boss. I died a couple of times. Suddenly, instead of going back to the statue to then do the run again, I was transported back in time into a story sequence. And that happened a couple of times, and it was just kind of okay.
So what if you don't die? What if you're just really amazing at games and you don't die?
I genuinely don't know. I don't know if it's something that you'll miss out on if you don't die. I'd say that pretty much everyone's going to die at some point on this game because it is bloody hard at times. Sometimes the controls are a little bit awkward, like movement is a little bit too slow or something like that, and you'll die as a result of an enemy being able to move faster than you can dodge, kind of thing, you know. And it's not cheap, but it just doesn't feel that fun sometimes.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the point I'm at now, obviously I'm not going to spoil it, but I was just thrown into a boss fight at one point, and I was like, I didn't know how. You know, suddenly it happened, and I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing here. And I died.
Right.
And then it put me back to another point in the game where I was, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? You know, it's like, it's got the story, but it's the story you can't
You're being
follow.
Obtuse enough without... doubling down on this shit.
Yeah, it just feels like it could have been told better. It's like maybe they couldn't decide whether to go the subtle route, you know, like environmental storytelling, or tell something proper, and they just kind of hit a middle point instead. And rather than getting the best of both worlds, you're just getting a bit of an awkward mess. But
well,
I mean, it's a good game. It's just it's got a few. Too many issues, I think, to be able to go, yeah, you should, you know, go out and buy this right now. Especially, you know, you guys have all been telling me how good Dead Cells is.
Yeah.
It sounds like if you're going to go for something, you go for Dead Cells.
I mean, I will say this much to you guys, unless you are literally dying in terms of cash, if you buy Dead Cells and don't like it, and I say this to you personally, not to our entire listenership, just to you personally, if you buy it and don't like it, I'll give you the cash for it. That's how convinced I am that you'll love it. Like... You know, I wouldn't say the same of Far Cry 5's latest DLC, by the way.
Right.
Well, I say latest, like the zombie ones out at the end of the month, and I haven't played any of them, so I watched Chris play a little bit of the Vietnam one, and to me that looks like not really for me. The Lost on Mars one, I thought, well, they can, you know, it's more Far Cry, it's more batshit, it's more weird. It is more weird, like, you know, you start again on a new map, a very barren map, it's Mars after all.
Yeah.
I think it's Herc, your buddy Herc, I think it is, who's one of the loudmouth ones. I can't remember. There's two characters in it. One of them's the pilot guy whose wife is pregnant in the game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember him.
And Herc is the other one. I can't remember. But he's headless now, anyway. Trying to save the Earth with the help of Anne, who is some sort of AI who, having played only an hour of it, I would bet is actually the bad guy all along, perhaps. Don't know. And you got, you know, beam weapons and laser and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. It's sounding a bit Saints Row.
You know, like, No.
I mean, like, the weirdness of it, like, the DLC that they did for... I want to say it was 4, and they did something similar.
What, not Get Out of Hell?
Maybe it was 3, then. They did one.
Well,
it was like
to be fair, like, it's not... It ain't Saints Row. It's still Far Cry. You know, there's different things to collect that are different currencies for you to buy different... Like, so there's some funny self-aware moments. Like, the first thing you do once you properly get out of the tutorial is, like, you're told, oh, you need to climb this tower and turn the power on. And someone goes, oh, man, I thought I'd fucking climbed the last of my towers when I did such and such. And it's like, yeah, okay, funny. But also, you are making me manually climb a tower. Like, it does that thing where it takes the piss out of it, but still makes you do it.
Yeah.
You know, from what I've seen of Vietnam and what I've played of Lost on Mars, the zombie one's going to have to do something very special to make you feel that you got good. Because, sure, the value proposition, you've got 3 decent-sized single-player.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but in terms of actually being good, I'm not convinced this is very good at all. I booted it up because I realised, hey, I haven't played any of the DLC, and hey, I actually haven't seen Far Cry 4 in 4K and with HDR, blah, blah, blah. I just never had. So it's kind of a 2 birds, 1 stone thing. And yeah. I don't think... I was literally sat there thinking I need to have a game to talk about on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because I said, can't talk about the other ones, and it was that. And it's like, it's all right. I also booted up God of War. I thought about going and getting the Platinum.
Yes.
I haven't achieved the Platinum. Is
this going to be another Horizon Zero Dawn? You're like, update us every week now.
I don't think so, because I think, for me, the trouble with the Platinum for God of War is that you can turn it down to easy in that, but it maybe highlights one of my few complaints with it, that actually you won't get, unless you're on the same journey of, like, I've finished it and I just want to get the plat, is that there are enough collectibles spread far enough out on the world, and the load time between those areas is just long enough that it's like, this isn't convenient to do.
Yeah.
And I guess if I can find, like, a trophy roadmap somewhere that is literally area by area, but every time I found one, it was like, and here's all the artifacts in the game. Here's all the birds in the game. You have to Odin's ravens. And it's like, no, I kind of need, here's this area's stuff. And I think there are some parts of the game that once you go back to them, areas are blocked. And it's like, that's not actually a big deal because you can fast travel. But so if I were to say to you the very verdant, beautiful area that you come across earlier in the game above someone's house where there's like a tree that's actually a creature. You're with me? Like, it's gorgeous, like one of those beautiful things. I don't know how you get back there, because if you go back to that person's house at the end of the game, that door no longer opens for story reasons.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how I get back out there.
Yes. So when you actually go there,
you're coming from the other side.
Way. Yeah. I don't know where you'd get have to. Exactly,
and I have gone round some of the areas, and the thing is the game's designed to be a single-player game in which you are propelled, thrust, if you will, forward into the adventure, and that means that when you go back to those areas, you don't really have your bearings, like, especially 2 months later or more, because you're like, well, I remember going through this area, but I was kind of always going forward and upwards and towards my objective, and okay, it's absolutely not a complaint about the game, but it feels like, you know, with Bloodborne, which was my first ever Platinum, and I've had a few since, it feels like this game is such an amazing game that I kind of wanted that Platinum. I don't know. I may continue to search for a guide. I'm also one of these that I hate doing that sort of thing via a phone. Like, I really hate... I know, like, Mikhail, news editor, he actually works from his iPad a lot of the time, and I can't do it. I hate that.
Yeah,
I hate that,
and I hate laptops. PC for certain things.
Absolutely.
Like,
it needs to be a computer with a monitor and a mouse and a keyboard. I really hate using laptops and stuff. So trying to navigate round these websites and forums of a guide with like an iPad, like my ancient second generation iPad, or my, you know, my very current iPhone. I got an iPhone 8, but it's not comfortable. Yeah. I don't want to do it. So it's like, and I was doing it, like every time I do this sort of thing, it's the weekend where it's like, no, I'm not turning the PC on because I'll start working. So maybe you know, during the week, you know, this week perhaps I'll have another think. But well, I don't know. Anyway, that was my God of War minute. I don't think I'm going to just keep mentioning it every week because there's nothing to add, if you know what I mean. It's yeah, just, have it's... I platinumed it? Not yet, you know.
I suppose with Horizon, it was a case of you were actually playing
through it. Yeah,
it's not a case of you were just going into... get a few bits here and there.
No, I mean, I will say God of War, just a reminder, what a great game that is. Oh, and yes, how amazing it looks.
I need to actually play it. Just return to it and have a look at myself, because I didn't play it
when I had
my 4K TV It would be nice to go back and just have a look at it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, yeah, it's a beautiful game when I was playing it, just 1080p.
Yep.
Although I say that like 1080p is bad
dog shit, but of course it's not.
Yeah, it's
I mean,
just...
listen, I still play God of War in 1080p because I have HDR on. Sorry, not because I have HDR on, because I have performance mode on. Because I want the higher frame rate.
Oh, then. Yeah, you do enjoy the frame rate, don't you?
Whereas... I very much enjoy a frame rate. I tell you what I really like is when a game does 4K and the frame rate.
Yeah.
Like Gears of War does on Gears of War 4 does on Xbox One X. Like that game gives you the 4K, the HDR, and the 60 frames, or near enough.
Yeah, Forza 7 does as well, doesn't it?
Yes, and Horizon probably as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think
that.
Horizon 3, I want to say that, I don't think that had the frame rate. I think it was something that
that
might be added to 4. Like you can...
I mean, let's just appreciate how good 4's going to look.
Oh, I just need that game. I need it.
Well, I'll tell you what game you do need, Gaz. You need Time Splitters.
Yes.
Koch Media or Koch... I'm never really sure.
I thought it was just Koch Media.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's Koch or Koch.
Is it not German?
It is German, which I think would mean it's Koch.
Yeah,
which
I think
is
you'd be
right. Damn close. But regardless of penises, they've brought Time Splitters and Second Sight.
Time Splitters. I mean, They just need to at least do a redo of 2, you know, just tie it up a little bit and just give us Time Splitters 2 again.
That
game is brilliant.
Why would they even mention this unless they were planning on doing something with it?
Yeah, you wouldn't, would you? It'd just be a case of down the line somewhere, or it'd be one of those things that people find out, you know, when they just dig into trademark things that you see a lot of these days. Someone spotted the trademark for this, or you know, but yeah, unless they've got a plan for, because it seems odd actually that they're specifically mentioning Second Sight as well,
which I can't even remember, so if you can remind me of what that was, I would be very grateful.
I mean, it was another Free Radical game, and it was the one where you had like, I think you had like telekinetic abilities and stuff like that. I think it was third person.
See, when you say that, all I can think of is PsyOps, which was an incredible game.
I do believe they were released very close together.
Okay, well then that's why, because I played PsyOps and thought it was a magnificent game and one I would love a sequel for. Well, maybe not now, it wouldn't work perhaps, but that game was amazing. Just saying. And Time Splitters too. Time Splitters as well was a great series at the time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind, because you know, have you got any of them? Like, because you've got the ability to do retro stuff. I'd be intrigued, like, if what that is like now.
I have,
because I in my head, it's Doom like.
Yeah, I did play Time Splitters 2 recently, went back to it at friends, and it does hold up, you know, it's still very good. It's like GoldenEye, because it was like, well, it was the same people, basically, wasn't it? Near enough. And
I think it was better than GoldenEye. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, I'd agree. Like, the gameplay was so much
Christ,
smoother.
Wait, hang on. No, I take it back, Gary. I don't. GoldenEye, much better. I can't have that.
Can't be agreeing with me again. That
not with the Gary.
Work.
Can we both agree that delays are fine if they're to make the games better?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, Spyro... I feel like the only person in the world not over the moon hyped for this.
Oh no!
I was around when Spyro came out. I was an adult when Spyro came out, and I liked Spyro when it came out, but I feel like it will be fine. I'm sure it will be a good game and a lovely trip down memory lane, right?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where some people are expecting the level of success that Crash had, and I just don't think that's happening. If Skylanders was still a big thing, maybe this would have been a bigger deal. But I mean, I know there's been all that thing over recently. The second and third game, the downloads.
Yeah, they're downloads. They were. I don't know if they still are.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Like people now, I wonder if they're thinking, okay, we need to find a way of getting these on the disc. But yeah, I don't know.
They say the delay is to give the trilogy more love and care, which like. I mean, November, Red Dead. I mean, Red Dead is going to be blamed for so many bad sales.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know if it affects Spyro with it being very different markets, but there's definitely an overlap. And
you see, they're different markets, but I think it's the same audience, because I think the people who are old enough to be playing Red Dead now and be hyped for a new Red Dead are the people who are old enough that enjoyed Spyro at that time.
Yeah, you make a good point.
And I think they've got to make a choice. And like,
yeah, there isn't really a choice, is there?
Like, don't get me wrong, we will review and cover Spyro, as we will any big release, but it's one of those ones where I probably personally won't even play it. But that's because we are facing down the barrel of a gun that is loaded with ridiculous games. I mean, and if I was going to play a game I played before, well, it wouldn't be this one either, because I still haven't finished it. But Diablo 3 Eternal Collection is now Kel Surprise confirmed for Nintendo Switch.
Nobody saw that coming.
No, it was a shock. What the hell was that teaser about then? All those that months ago when they had the Switch turning off on, like,
yeah, it was weird that they did it and then they were like, oh no, we're not making. It's like, what?
It makes you wonder if they were going to announce it and then changed their mind, but teaser was already out. And, do you know what I mean? Like, it's really weird.
Well, I mean, I think this is a good move, because I think Diablo that game will fit on Switch brilliantly.
I'm not going to say it, because I will only give Dead Cells that right, but it is a really good fit for Switch.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that it's an old game, so it won't look too bad.
But Blizzard are very good at getting... I don't know. They make things work, basically, without... Yeah. They optimise things very well.
Well, we'll see.
I don't think I'd buy it again, because I've got it on the PC.
I've got the original release on PC and the PS4 version. I think I had the Xbox promo disc, but gave it to a friend.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I played the most of the original version on PC, but I went through the entire thing properly on PS4.
Yeah.
I don't feel the need to go, because I'm not the type that goes back and plays the seasons and stuff like that.
No, because you don't have the time.
Yeah, I'm like, I'd rather I played it. Partly for the loot, partly for the story. Oh, it's a bit minimal, but I still enjoy
all right.
it. So yeah, I don't really feel the need to go back and play it again. I might pick it up on the cheap, you know, further down the line. But
I mean, there's a game I suspect you'll be going through several times. And Gary, I have a question for you. Do you consider yourself and me, both the pair of us, a pair of just chumps who, you know, easy money targets? I don't think we are we?
No, no. I used to be.
Yeah, I definitely used to like the old collector's editions, but I've stopped of late. The last one I got was God of War, but that was because I felt that game was just special and had enough time pre-release to know I wanted that special edition in my life, just to put it somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
So, Gary, why the hell am I looking at this image of Resident Evil 2 collector's edition and thinking I want it?
Yeah.
Because I don't want it. Like, Leon's not even one of my favourite characters. Why do I want that statue in my office?
I'm one of the people that... Well, I mean, you all know my opinions by now, but there was always that thing of, you know, is it Chris Redfield or Leon? And I'm like, Chris? I'm a Chris.
I mean, maybe if I thought about it in the cold light of day now, given Resident Evil 6, maybe I wouldn't quite be a Chris guy, but... I don't know. But this looks all right, yeah?
Yeah, it is a good addition. I like the little the keys. They're quite cool.
Trouble is, they look too much like the Bayonetta lollipops now. Like, I don't know if you've got your keyboard near you that you can use, but if you type in Bayonetta 2 lollipop...
Okay, all right, let's have a look then.
Gary is doing that. I'm thinking of Chris Redfield again. While Gary's doing that,
I've not got the muscles for that.
No. I've seen some of the Capcom collector's editions. Like, do you remember the Infinity Stones thing they sent out to people for MVC? Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Resident Evil house that they recalled. I've seen some of those things.
God,
and
that was terrible.
So yeah. No, you're right. So I'm not going to be putting my money down for the collector's edition, I don't think. Have you got a picture up of
it? Yeah, I can see it. I can see what you mean.
But I mean, but basically, what are we getting? So we're getting a steelbook case. People go mad for steelbooks. I find them really annoying and awkward.
Yeah, I don't like them because actually...
Gary, please stop agreeing with me.
But it's a practical thing in that discs can get, there's more likelihood of the inside of them cracking from one of those crappy cases than a standard case. Because the inside of the steelbook ones are shit.
So this also comes with a 12-inch Leon figure, limited edition. I mean, the whole thing's a collector's edition, so why they need to say limited edition Raccoon Police Department, Raccoon City... Shouldn't that be RCPD keys, Raccoon City Police Department keys? Doesn't matter. Collector's
it was always Raccoon Police Police Department. I don't know why.
Okay, it doesn't make any sense.
I would have been on... Yeah.
Made in Heaven pin badge, poster, art book and soundtrack, CD... And costumes and the Samurai Edge, but you know that's Resi 2. Maybe it's me. They seem to be promoting all the stuff for Resi 2 super early, like really early.
I don't know why.
No, I don't know why. But... Oh, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say you think they're going to bring the release date forward, don't you?
Oh no, I don't think they'd bother because I think. Well, that's right. If they did, they'd put it into the worst possible time.
They'd put it out on the same day as Red Dead.
At this point, they're releasing
it. If we brought it forward, yay! Same day as Red Dead. What?
At least...
What are you doing?
At the moment, they're releasing it at a good point because it's outside of the Christmas rush.
But they did this with the last Resi, didn't they?
Yeah.
No, did they?
Mm-hmm.
They did it with Remake HD. They did, yeah. Nice winter release for a Resi game is good. I agree with that.
Yeah, they released... I mean, I think the only thing with 7 that kind of made it a little bit more palatable was you had the demo stuff as well.
Of course,
the constantly updated demo, which I part of me wondered if they would release the, you know, the press demo that Chris played, that kind of, you know...
Kitchen demo.
I don't see them bringing it forward, but you know, I wouldn't complain if they did.
Well, but, speaking of not complaining, I have not played the Black Ops 4 beta yet, but I will be jumping in September on first on PS4 they get the Blackout beta, which is the Battle Royale mode.
Yeah,
can't really add much to it, but I am still very excited to see what that thing is.
Like, yeah, I'm intrigued.
I remain intrigued, yeah.
It's one of those things where, I've spoke about this in the past, like, I don't play competitive online games, but I can play these Battle Royale games. Yeah. I find a bit of fun in them because it's not just spawn, death, you know. There's a bit more to it. I might be tempted to give this a try myself. The beta, anyway, just to see what it's like.
Sorry, Gaz, but I saw the segue and I had to take it.
I'll go for it.
Will you be playing Dark Souls Remastered when it releases on October 19th?
Maybe, but just the version I've already got.
Oh, okay. I wonder where you were going with it. Gary, you know, this brand new hot game that was coming out summer 2018 is still coming out in summer 2018 in October 19th. That's when the Switch version of Dark Souls is finally coming and the Amiibo is released then as well. I mean, good. Not being funny. It still blows my mind that the game that seemed to have a marketing deal with Nintendo is now out everywhere but Nintendo.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, they've obviously delayed it for a reason. But I suppose this is another one where, like, I get people will play it on the Switch.
It'll do quite well. Unless they've burnt bridges by delaying it like this.
Well, I think it's one of those things, they're still releasing the Amiibo.
Yeah.
And that will get people into it. I mean, you know yourself, you're a recovering Amiibo.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for recognising.
But yeah, you'll get the people that will buy the amiibo, and because they're buying the amiibo, they'll buy the game.
I don't quite
understand that, but people
do. No, but you're right.
And it'll do well. It's more Dark Souls, and people will want to play that portable. But I mean, we don't always see eye to eye on frame rate stuff, but I would absolutely take frame rate over the portability.
Mate, I have been mulling over an article idea about the Switch that would make me the most hated man in the industry, but like, I really
don't,
feel
don't
like
don't take that away from me.
No, I would. I'm sorry, it would trump you. I really strongly feel we need to stop acting like Nintendo Switch is perfect.
Yeah.
I really do. Like, it really concerns me because, like, I'm not here to say you're bad if you play a game on Switch instead because you choose the portability. That's absolutely fine. I believe in choice. I believe that everything should be acceptable. The problem for me is that people are acting like it's their games are not inferior. Like, it is a technical achievement that Doom is playable on Switch. Okay?
Definitely. Absolutely.
And I mean the modern Doom.
It's incredible.
But it is an inferior version. And not just because it looks worse, but it runs worse. There's a huge difference between I'd say I will happily pick a frame rate over resolution. But I saw an interview on Eurogamer recently about Doom Eternal, where the developers said that the game is being developed by Panic Button for Switch, which they seem to be pretty good at that. But it will run at 30 frames. And the quote was something like, what was the damn quote? But it was like, basically, there's no performance hit. And there is. There's half of it.
Yeah.
There's half of a performance hit. And if you've played Doom, 2016's Doom. 2016's Doom.
Yeah.
If you've played that at 60 frames, you know the difference between that and the... And again, I think it's great that the option is there for people who want to play on Switch. But when the developers are coming out and saying there is no difference, essentially, I think that's just bullshit.
Yeah, there's definitely... It's a noticeable difference. I mean...
What does that mean to people who play on a PC? Like, you're just basically saying, up yours. You know, who cares that you've got this rig that can run a game? And again, that is a choice, but surely you do... I'm not saying that the Switch version shouldn't exist, but I'm saying when you develop for the high end, you shouldn't be then out in public saying there's no noticeable difference, essentially.
Yeah,
I'm paraphrasing slightly. I'm gonna find the interview while you tell me if I'm right or wrong.
I do think that there's something to it because, I mean, when they did the port for Doom for Switch, that was a later thing.
Here you go. Sorry, Gaz, I found it already. Eurogamers, hang on, Rob Purchase, so he's been there a while. He knows what he's talking about. He says, graphically, it sounds like you're doing even more with Eternal, but you said it will run at 60 frames per second on Switch as well. Marty Stratton, we don't run at 60 on Switch. Doom 2016 didn't run at 60 on Switch. It ran at 30, and really, it was no sacrifice to the experience. I'm sorry, I disagree. Rob continued, but on other platforms it will run at 60, Marty. Yes, that's always the goal. The engine has an interesting way of flexing. It flexes around 60 FPS. Sometimes games engine flex around other metrics, but us, we try and set the line, always trying to maintain 60. Those two statements don't make sense. You can't say we try and set the line at maintaining 60, which, let's be honest, PC gamers are probably going, that's the minimum. And then just 10-20 seconds earlier say, oh, it will run at 30 on Switch and that's no sacrifice to the experience.
I
just think we need to stop pretending the Switch is perfect, except it's a terrific machine with great support, and be really happy that unlike the Wii U, the Switch has got support, but accept that it... Because, like, if the shoe were on the other foot, and this was back when... Remember when Xbox was doing 900p?
Yeah. Oh, people went fucking mad over that.
Like, can we not double standards?
It's Nintendo, though, isn't it? And Nintendo always have that. I
want my wife, my best friend is my wife, and I want her to tell me if I could be doing better, because I feel like that's how I improve. If the people I trust the most can't tell me you can be better, I'm never going to improve. And I feel like part of loving something, like if you love the Switch, part of wanting it to be the best it can be is to call shit out like that.
Yeah. Well, that's... Anyway. I suppose if we go back to the Xbox One, that happened. People called out the shit.
And they
still do. And they are constantly developing it to make it the machine that people want.
They called it out, and rightly so, because they were trying to sell the games console that was this great new next-gen thing, and it was running games at 900p while the competition... And let's not pretend that the PS4 didn't steal a lead because of it, because they did. A combination of exclusives and the 1080p thing and being the most powerful console did do it. But I don't know, maybe this... Listen, I'm not going to start shouting at Nintendo fans. Let's do some listener correspondence. And we got one here from last week we didn't get time for. Thomas has got two questions this week. We're doing both because we forgot last week. Why do games have zero presence on TV? Go 8-bit was great. That was Dario Breen's thing. But Hidden Away on Dave. It's a bit harsh on Dave. such a big part of popular culture, yet little coverage on the small screen. I'd like to see Gary on TV with his controversial opinions. God is a Geek TV funded by Patreon. We're happy if we can get the audience to fund full-on multicam setups and game shows. Listen, I'll spearhead that quite happily.
I would happily put aside my hatred of being on camera to do that. Which is weird for a guy that goes doing streams, but...
Listen, you know, we do the things we have to do sometimes. This is good for us. Why do games have zero presence?
I think the internet.
It's partly the internet. I think partly that, like, I'm sorry, but like anyone who works in the industry, I bet most people who do have been asked the question, what do you do for a living? And when you answer, they go, oh, you just play games all day. Like, there is still that perception. Like, as editor-in-chief of GodAsAGeek.com, if I get to play, let's just pretend for a minute that I worked 9 to 5 today. Let's just pretend that happened. I probably didn't play a game. I mean, I did today, but it's not a work day. Like, on a general work day, you're lucky. Most people I know, like, their day is sat behind a computer and then they take the console or the game home and they play it in their own spare time, which is totally not the way it should be.
Yeah.
But there's this, it's just, listen, at the end of the day, games are also your pastime. So it does mix things up a bit, but that's not the question. Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know, because games are huge budget nowadays, and I think games are slowly sleeping onto TV with esports, but not in the UK.
Yeah, I think the one of the issues is still the perception, because I mean, there's that whole thing recently of, was it
Fortnite.
O2?
All right,
there was that. But yeah, that O2 advert where it's like, I forget what it was, but it's essentially, you know, what if your kid just wants to be an e-gamer or something like that, and it's like, well, you know, if they want to do that, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a valid thing these days. But it's still the perception is gaming is still...
For kids?
It's a
silly hobby.
Yeah, and it's daft. It really is stupid, because it's just like... The gaming industry is as big, if not bigger, than films these days. You know, there's more money to be made, and it's just...
For the right people, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bizarre one.
It is, and we aren't going to answer it that way. Let's be honest. We don't know. We don't know why. I only saw one episode of Go 8-Bit, and I thought it was all right.
I actually
am worried now that we answered this last week. We definitely didn't, did we?
No, we didn't. We had it to go, but we had a time issue at the time, and we're just like, we need to move this to next week.
Okay. Well, Thomas also asks, we're given the second one, talking about peek behind the curtains, like you just said then. How about a peek behind the curtain on your approaches to reviewing games? Do you take notes as you go play through them and reflect, etc.? Gaz, you go first, mate.
I kind of do a bit of both. With Death's Gambit at the minute, I've only just started making a few notes, because I was just playing it and then just sort of letting it go in my head, you know, just think about it. And then, whereas other times I'll constantly be making notes on it, you know.
Yep.
I think sometimes it depends on the game as well, and I do find that I make a lot more notes when it's a game that's not very good, you know. You're like, okay, this is why, you know. I forget where, but I remember seeing someone, it might have been on Twitter, someone saying that they do spend a lot more time on bad games, or, you know, they're not as good games, because you don't want to, I don't know, you don't want to cock it up and look stupid as a result, because you're criticizing something that someone's put, you know, hundreds of hours into making, probably more, in fact. I tend to sort of do a bit of both. Anyway, it depends on the game.
My sort of way of doing it hasn't really changed in the sort of near 10 years now. Like, I tend to just play the game, and then if depending on the style of the game, I suppose, but I tend to wait until like, I don't sit down and go, right, it's time to write a review. They'll just be like, if almost like a flash of inspiration, the opening line will just appear and I'll be like, right, time to write it. And sometimes I won't have finished the game. So what I will do is then I will sit on that review, finish the game, and come back and read it and go like, yeah, okay, no, that's fine. Because a lot of the times with those kind of games, it's a story element, and I very much believe in not spoiling a game. I believe you can spoil a game, but there's a different thing to do then. Like, there's an article to be written, a spoiler article, not in the review. So more often than not, it's a mechanical thing. Like, have I definitely seen everything this game's going to offer? And then it's a case of, well, is it going to be too long? Is it going to run out of its own welcome? You know, so. But that doesn't always happen. Like, I will sometimes, you know, because games are different lengths, but sometimes on a 40-hour game, after 20, you can write the review. 20 more hours and you finish it, you come back and go, okay, yeah, no, that's fine, hand that in, that's finished. Or you might not. And that varies for me game to game. I don't really take any notes. The only time I take notes is I used to do that when we reviewed more Telltale game stuff, because I used to write down story notes.
Right.
Almost to avoid mentioning, or just to remind me, because sometimes with those kind of games I find hard to write, because it's like, this is just another one of those.
Yeah.
And I paint myself into a corner by not being spoilery. But yeah, I tend to just literally just sit down and write the review. I know it sounds really weird, like, you know, I'm so good, I just write it. But I kind of, I wouldn't say that, but I do just, when it feels right, the time to write it, I just sit down and write it.
That's what I say. I mean, I've only been doing this a couple of years, so I'm still learning. Well, I mean, we're all still learning
all the time,
but like, I'm still very much like learning the ropes, even you know, at this point. And you know, there will be times, I imagine, later on when I'll do stuff like you're doing. You know, it'll be like, I don't need to make notes; I can just write it when I write it. You know?
Part of that is I was going to use the word courage, but that would be the wrong word. Conviction, like, when you've done it for long enough, you stop worrying. Like, I know some people are like, oh, what's everyone else gonna give it. I couldn't give a fuck, I really couldn't. And that sounds tremendously arrogant, but it isn't. It's just more a case of accepting that you're not wrong, because a review is, yeah, maybe you, if you want to call it a qualified critical opinion, fine, otherwise it's just an opinion. And there will be 100 of them out at the time the review embargo lifts, but then there'll be 1,000 of them out 2 days later when the review game's out, and then there'll be tens of thousands of them all over the Twitter and internet and everywhere else. Like, your opinion is your opinion. You're not wrong. If you get something factually wrong, because because you don't know any better, because there's no one else to talk to, because it's under embargo, then you can correct that, because a review doesn't have to be the be-all and end-all, because things can go wrong and things can break. But also ask yourself the question is, I was factually wrong about this. It's not set in 1952, it's set in 1953. Does that make you think the game's better? It's very unlikely. It's possible that you may have a big issue with the time setting being wrong, but it really isn't going to change your score from a 7 to a 10.
No.
You know, it's about having that conviction of, like, I know what I'm saying is right, because it's how I feel. You know, think about, like... Like, Gaz, you played God of War, but you weren't reviewing it.
Yeah.
You know, your opinion on it is no different to if you were reviewing it. It's still your opinion on the game. You're just on this podcast talking about it. It's tremendously rewarding to know that people wait for our reviews. It's tremendously... And I think that when you realise there are a number of people who are waiting for the God is a Geek verdict, and they know that Gary Bailey is on it, and they're excitedly waiting for that score, I think there can be some pressure and some responsibility. But ultimately, as long as you just believe you're being honest,
you
can't really do anything wrong.
That thought of, you know, like, because, you know, we've had people, I think Thomas even said it to me on... I think it's the last one that I reviewed before F1, which I'm now blanking on. But yeah, I mean, because I was like, it was like my first review, because I took a little bit break, as you know, and it's like, it came back, I was like, oh, I'm not sure about that review. I mean, you know, when I sent it off, I was sure, you know, it's the right
thing. Wasn't We Happy Few, was it?
Yes, it was. Yes, thank you. And it was like, you know, is it a good review? You know, is the writing good, basically, you know, because it was just
It was.
But it was, you know what it's like, you sort of doubt yourself, you've not done it for a while, you're just a bit like, oh shit, you know, have I lost anything in that time? But yeah, when he said, you know, I read the review and it's convinced me like not to buy it, or, you know, others said it's convinced me to go and pick up this game and stuff like that. And it's like, that, I don't think that'll ever go away, that feeling of like, oh shit, people do actually listen to me. You know,
I think that's a good thing though, because it keeps you honest and it keeps you. Yeah. It keeps you honest, and it means that you will always care about doing the best, you know. And that's the same for me. Like I always like the last big one that I remember thinking, do you know what, I know I'm going to be the underlier, was Detroit. And I think people probably were expecting me to give that game a 9 or something because I like David Cage's games, but to me it was just one, it broke me, that game was miserable and so full of shit, quite honestly, that I probably should have given it a lower score, maybe. It was just how I feel now, I suppose, but yeah. not really. I gave it the score I believed it to have, and I stand by it. But I knew that I just had this feeling, I think this is going to be the one that everyone suddenly... And I think I said it on a podcast about a month before. I think I said, like, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one where all of a sudden everyone suddenly loves David Cage and thinks his games are great. And it wasn't quite that, but it was certainly the highest rated. And yet, for me, it's the most poorly written of them all, and that's saying something.
Yeah, I remember you being really sort of down on the writing.
It's bad.
It's not a game I'll play, to be perfectly honest. I don't really play those kind of games.
No, I do like them, but that one broke me a bit. But when the review went up, I wasn't sat there going, "Oh shit! Oh shit! Oh shit!" It's like I can only be honest and say that. Look, and that's what I've always said: visit other sites, always come back to us, please. But also find people. You might find, I mean, Gary and I think have got fairly similar tastes, but where perhaps he goes for the racing more, I go more sports, that kind of thing. Otherwise, I think we've got similar-ish tastes. So find the people on God is a Geek who you're like, you know, oh, I seem to play the same games as Adam, or I seem to play the same games as Chris. And find those people. And that's why podcasts are great.
That's it. We're always happy if people want to ask us on Twitter what we think of Game X, Game Y, you know. We'll give the opinion, you know. We're not, well, if we can, you know. Obviously, if they ask us about a game that's under embargo, we can't answer. But but any normal time, we're always gonna give you the opinion. We're gonna believe what we're saying. You know, we're not gonna bullshit you.
And the other thing as well, reviews are changing. I said this a few months ago, and I still am thinking about it now. We're in the middle of a site redesign. I don't know when that's going to happen, so I can't tell you when. I just know it's going to be an awful lot of work. And so that means timing-wise, it has to be that we have a site we can work on that you can't see, but then one that we can turn into the site you can see, which means some downtime over a weekend perhaps, but it's difficult to... I'm not going to lie, it's a lot of work, and there are some things that need to be ironed out that I can't yet say are ironed out, which means I can't give even a... I mean, I'd like to do it this year, let's put it that way, but that's as best... I actually wanted to do it last year. That's how long it's taking. But, like... No, I've forgotten my point. I've completely forgotten my point. It was, oh, yeah, reviews are changing, and that's... excuse me, something I'm still wrestling with, because I, like, we re-reviewed No Man's Sky.
Yes.
You know, I think Sea of Thieves will need that at some point. I think maybe Destiny will need that at some point. You know, do we review the Switch version of Diablo 3 as a full review or a Switch report, because it's a new title for the game, it's all of the stuff again. Like, I don't know. This is stuff we'll have to discuss and decide. I mean,
we're in that point where we've got like the games as a service kind of thing, and you've got stuff like Fortnite, which is constantly changing. You can't really review it, because by the time your review goes up, the next season's out, and you know, well, maybe not quite that slow at reviewing, but you know, it's almost like reviewing PCs and stuff like that. You know.
Things change.
Like, yeah, it's like
a single player game, like Bloodborne, even though it got a 10 on release, is a better game than it was then, because it has had some DLC added to it. You can buy it cheaper and get all of that, the same you would have back then. The performance is better.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a person called At Blue Fury 47 asks, how did Alan Wake get to the final of the best horror game competition? And I don't know is the answer. Well, I do know. It's Darren.
There was a bit of vote fixing, I think.
Yeah. But it didn't win the final, which is all that really matters. And lastly, Dane, we ran a poll, by the way, if you're wondering. I think Chris did it. It wasn't me. That's all I know. Because he put some in those polls that were like, man, this is too early for these two to be competing. But nonetheless, there was a poll about the best horror game of all time, which is officially Dead Space, which I'm, given the finalists, I'm okay with. Dane on our Discord, which you can get, we've got a Discord channel, it's God is a Geek. There's also a premium version, like say Patreon, $1 a month, you get access to the Patreon specifically for sorry, the Discord specifically for Patreons. He asks, what are your favourite genres? Pick a top three and give us some of your favourite games from each while you're on it. Mine's pretty easy. I like shooters. I like action adventure games, which is a massive genre.
Yeah.
And I like platformers, which kind of, you know, I love the others, but I suppose those are my three favourites. Yeah. And while Gary is listing his, I'm going to think of some of my favourite games from the genre.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously, like, racing's a top one. Yeah, action adventure for me, and probably RPGs.
I would have said that once upon a time, but I've come to accept, while I'll always love RPGs, I just don't have time for them anymore. So unless I'm reviewing one and sort of being paid to do it,
yeah,
like, you know, I've got Ni No Kuni 2 on my PS4, never booted it. And that's a tragedy of its own. But in terms of favourite games, Super Meat Boy is always, and Super Mario World, two of my favourite platformers of all time. DMC, one of my favourite action-adventure games. I'm not sure. Shooters. Titanfall 2 is exceptional. Doom 2016 is exceptional. I adore Gears of War as a series. I used to love Call of Duty, but they've escaped me now in terms of how I just can't keep up with those people online.
No. I can't at all.
No, there's no point even trying. You know, Titanfall 2 I could just about keep up with because there was enough difference in the mechanics. Yep. And, of course, the Titans that meant there's different elements to it. You know, I'll always play a Mario game. Platformers, I'm trying to think of another one. I adore Guacamelee, the first one. I think it's superb. I mean, I suppose if you want to talk subgenres, Ori and the Blind Forest is a Metroidvania. I love Metroidvania games. I really do.
Yeah. I'd kind of put them in with stuff like RPGs and action adventures. It's a subgenre of.
I've not even said fighting games, and I love fighting games. But again, they've just a bit like RPGs. They've left me behind. But I suppose Street Fighter 4 would be up there for me as one of my favourites. So that was a real moment in time for me. I love that. Overwatch is one of my favourite games of all time, and there's a shooter for you.
Yeah.
Christ. That's it, I've said Gears. I do like the Assassin's Creeds, but they're just getting longer and longer and longer. I like the Far Cries, but not as much as perhaps some other shooters. Oh, what else is there, Gaz? What action-adventure? I mean, I've said they're my favourite genre, and I can't think of them.
Uncharted would be one of mine.
That's a shooter, though, isn't it, really?
I would have put it on action-adventure myself.
Okay.
That and Tomb Raider are kind of like action-adventures, but like more than...
See, when I say action-adventures, I'm thinking of stuff like perhaps more like a Horizon, which is a shooter, but you know, or I'm thinking of like a Tomb Raider or sorry, not Tomb Raider, like Spider-Man that's upcoming, that kind of open world, right, action adventure. Crackdown was terrific. I still love that first Crackdown deeply, but yeah, there's some games to pick from. What about your favourite racing games though?
Project Cars 2.
Wow, that's recent.
My like all-time favourite racer would be Race Driver Grid.
Okay. I mean,
that one, that game was so good. And I have so many great online memories of that, playing it with friends. The first Gran Turismo. Forza Horizon 3, absolutely. One of the best out there.
I mean, Red Dead, I've forgotten to say as well. Obviously, Red Dead Redemption is an amazing game. The best game of last generation. Bioshock 1 and 2 and 3. Well, Infinite, sorry.
Yeah. Infinite, I thought, like, its story was brilliant. I think it's just, as a game, it just, I don't know, it kind of dropped the ball in a few places.
Animal Crossing, but that doesn't fit any of my genres.
No, none of mine, but yeah, that's a game that, if they ever do bring out a Switch one,
maybe.
I could see myself just losing many, many hours to that.
Nier Automata. But we'll move on.
Been here a long time.
Yeah. But that's the podcast this week. I'm at GBSF on Twitter. Of course, go to @GodAsAGeek, and that is where you'll find some polls that have crazy people voting on them. Voting Alan Wake's a great game, but it's not a finalist of the best horror game of all time.
No.
It's just not.
I'm still sore that Darren got it to beat Resident Evil 2.
Let's not talk about it, Gary, please.
That's going to get me angry.
Yeah. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, we're back every Wednesday or sometimes Sunday night, Monday, whatever. You know, if you're a Patreon for $1 a month, that URL is Patreon, patreon.com/GodIsAGeek. And $1 a month gets you early access to videos, It gets you an inside track on what's going on at God is a Geek. It gets you all sorts of stuff. But this podcast also, 24, 48, sometimes 72 hours early, and with a longer bit where we talk about other stuff that's not always gaming related. Thank you ever so much for your time, and thanks for being here again, Gaz.
You're very welcome.
And we'll speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye-bye for now.